Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Real Radio.
Well, you beat
Radio
me to it.
Listen, because I thought I might have to. You know, I've been doing that my whole life, beating people to the punch. People hate that, too. But all you have to do is be present in the moment, and you will beat most people to the punch. And that's, Real Radio, Radio established to address life. Life being that I have woke up 20 pounds heavier around the middle than I wanted. So I got out there and got my leg up before that sun got too oppressive, you know? So what you hear is Miss Rashi on the last tenth of a mile trying to get it right, because I don't have whoever them people that suck the fat out of Janet Jackson and them. I don't have it. I would love it, though, Lee, somebody to come and kind of scoop some of this extra out. With a melon baller, Scoopy been pushing me back out there on the way. I would love that, but unfortunately, since I sat there and ate all 15 jumbo shrimp by myself, I'm going to have to take all 15 of these jumbo walks by myself. And so that's the part, the consequences and accountability. That's kind of what we were talking about this year in general. What I would like wanted to talk about, and I love this country, because this week we became accountable for something, right?
How so?
Well,
how so?
We are now celebrating. We have a new holiday, and to me, it's a holiday about accountability. It's about something happened, and then something had to be stopped, and we never acknowledged that it started. This country don't acknowledge that there was a begin date, because in 1619, when those 20-some-odd people got off, they were not all enslaved. In fact, one or two of them were there for navigation, navigatory stuff. In fact, they would say that the 1490s is when you should start our count. Because that's when we helped navigate Columbus here to the lower portions. There was definitely Africans in 14, in the 1400s showing Italians and Jews and stuff how to get to the new world, to the to this new land. And so, but we had to start from somewhere. We had to be accountable for why non-indigenous people are here in this country. You know, before we talk treatment or conditions, why are we here? Like, how did we get here? That is a part of the accountability. And I'm excited to be a part of a show that tells when people are not being accountable and has the duty to report and has the duty to report when people are being accountable.
Fair enough, fair enough. Well, my take on this thing here is here we are being thrown a bone. And folks need to understand and recognize that a bone is just that. It's a scrap. It's no meat. You can't eat off a bone. You won't get full. It may give you enjoyment for the moment, you know, get the saliva glands working, strengthen the teeth, whiten them even a little bit, get some plaque off of them, but it's not going to fill your belly. And we are in a situation where we've been waiting too long for something to happen. And that something to happen is not making Juneteenth a holiday. That something to happen would have been the Robert Till anti-lynching bill. That something to happen should have been the John Lewis voting rights bill. That something to happen should have been the solidification of black folks' rights to vote in this country without the constant approval of Congress every so many years. That something to happen should have been a serious discussion on police reform. That's something to happen. I feel like Stephen A. right now. I feel like I'm Stephen A-esque right about now. But that's something to happen should have been a serious conversation about infrastructure, even, because infrastructure will lead to jobs. And we all know that the black unemployment rate, not the minority, but the black, I'm specifically speaking to black folks and about black folks, the unemployment rate tends to be two times, if not three times, that of our white counterparts. So, no, I'm not happy about a day of holiness that's truly unholy. The treatment of black folks in this country from slavery up until recent years, and even including recent years, is deplorable. You've given me a day which, if you work in private industry, you didn't even get the damn day, to be honest with you. You didn't get that day. It wasn't on their calendar, so your ass is still at work. If you work for the government in some form or fashion, then you got the day off. But again, if you in private industry, that's not on their calendar. So you still out here working. You still a slave. You still out here toiling the fields and turning over the soil. So, no, I wasn't happy about that. I wasn't shocked by it either because, you know, we are running into a voting cycle like we ever get out of one, but the midterms are coming up, and here you go. Because it was a unanimous vote, so now everyone gets to say, oh, I did. No, you didn't. No, you didn't. Because if you wanted this to happen, it would have happened years ago. Why did it happen now? That's my question. You know, there are folks running around here with dark-colored skin. And go ahead.
There had to be something, you know, after George Floyd, we did whatever celebration we were going to do about Derek Chauvin, but there was still, because there was a death right after that that's very similar to that nobody, you know, even knows about yet, and they squashed that for them. What I'm saying is we need these moments to celebrate, whether it's seemingly empty or not. But I tell you what, Juneteenth means more to me than Christmas. Juneteenth means more to me than Thanksgiving, you know? It does. Juneteenth means more to me than Flag Day. Juneteenth means more to me, you know, if I didn't have so many veterans in my family, I would say it means more to me than Veterans and Memorial Day. Because, you know, being a military member is selective. Being a descendant of a slave in America is not.
I don't think that most of us are in position enough to truly substantiate that argument. I mean by that, because our history is so scattered all over the place, I think a lot of us forget that many of us will be here before slavery hit the Americas. You know, I often say the only reason Columbus got to America was because of black folks. I mean, again, I've described the scene a million and one times. I could see a brother chilling right now in a pub, you know, down in a brew, talking trash about how he didn't want to go on this long-ass journey. But, you know, it was that time, and he had to put it in. And Columbus overhearing the conversation, he said, man, what are you talking about? I said, man, we go on this damn cruise. Because when you're in the Navy, you call tours or cruise. Man, we go on this cruise every other year, man. It takes like 2 months to get there. Yeah. Columbus, what the hell are you going to take 2 months to get to? Man, this place on over here, blah, blah. Columbus like, oh, for real? Yeah, well, you got a map or something? You know, brother probably drew him a map. Rough gets him a map. That's why Columbus asked in the West.
You get far enough, the currents take you, right? The current is what propels that trip. The transatlantic current, I believe they call it, or something like that. Just get out there and shut up and try to have enough food to survive. You can make it from any continent to any continent, you know.
But the point, though, is, you know, Africans were here before the European ever stepped foot on here. So the intermingling between the African and the native peoples here, I think a lot of us have forgotten about. And actually, I just ordered a book about that very thing. And I want to dig into that so I can start speaking to that from a more educated setting, to be honest with you. But, yeah, I do not believe that all of us were slaves. I don't believe that, you know, you could put that many people here through that means and us just be one. I mean, I see the folks in the plains in Colorado and New Mexico and Kansas and Oklahoma, and you know it's a whole lot of melanin running through them folks, and they claim native roots. Like that don't add up, Jack. I mean, it doesn't add up to the history that America tries to portray about the people that were here in America. If you know, you got all that melanin in your skin, it running through your body. I mean, I can see it. The facial features, the structure, your skin tone in general, and you know, I don't get that one, bro. I don't get that one, sis. Not at all. Not to mention all the folks in what is the land now known as Mexico, and how dark they were, you know what I'm saying? Like,
But that was the global trend. The global trend is now, you know, the lighter you can get it, the better it will be. And we have started all kinds of chemical warfare on ourselves, and like there's whole industries just trying to demelanate the planet, demelanation, right? And so we have to figure this out. Like, why would somebody on a sun planet, this is a sun planet, it's totally powered by, you know, the radiation of the sun keeps everything going on this planet. You know, it is not a geothermal thing. So why would a sun planet push itself to where it's putting stuff in the air that the sun can't, you know, rubbing stuff on your skin that the sun can't deal with, wearing such special types of clothing that the sun can't penetrate, why are we so actively demelanating this planet? And it'll give you a clue to why. You know,
it's self hate.
It's a real sad thing to see. But so when you get these situations, Lee, when you get to celebrate melanation, right? Celebrate something good that happened to black people. Celebrate the fact that many times it was us that got us free. There was not there was no real outside entity that came through. Like it wasn't no band, like a band of Italians that came through to help deal with the American slave Holocaust. There was we got no help for helping ourselves. Now, there are plenty of people, the Jews cannot say that. They cannot say that nobody came to their help. There was a whole war predicated on getting a Jew out of a chamber, right?
Mm-hmm.
There were no countries, no nations willing to even say any, maybe France said it a little bit, you know, ooh, look how disgusting it is. But they were engaged in very similar behavior while they were condemning the United States. But they were fairly low on the slave trade. Portugal, Spain, and Britain were some of the heavy hitters in the game. But nobody. Mm-hmm. Who came help us? Who came through? You know, somebody even came through. We came through for the Native Americans. Them Native Americans didn't have to, they didn't get
the
white
Europeans.
Dude off their back by themselves. We came through for the Chinese, too, because they didn't get, they was treating them Chinamen, they was dying on the railroad. Of course, the one place out by side, I'm going to go and try to sit up and talk. That's when the weed whacker man comes. Anyway, so the point I'm trying to make is, This is a self-driven, self-propelled, self-funded, self-fought thing that we got. Our freedom was not ordained from anybody on the outside. Nobody cared about them Africans being enslaved in this country. Not even for real Africa, because it was under the throes of colonization. They didn't have the wherewithal to worry about us. They was coming in on their heads. Nobody came for the black American. Nobody
Very
helped
true.
The black American.
But themselves. You know, the slave revolts in Haiti and Trinidad, Tobago, the various Caribbean islands. And a lot of that put fear in the mindset of the white Americans who immigrated from Europe to the shores of America, which later became the United States of America. And, you're absolutely right. Put a whole lot of fear in the Joker's hearts. But them cats in Haiti, they weren't playing. They wanted their freedom, and they took it. They pushed the French right on out of there.
Volatile, meaning what nobody... Like, nobody wanted a Haitian slave. Like, don't nobody want a post-Caribbean slave. By the time they come up out of the West Indies, they were so dead set on what it was going to take. You know, they did not have the ability. On them islands, we got it bad. But at least technically, we could run. When you're on an island, where are you going? You are allowed to treat a human in a way unlike any other place on earth, because if they keep running, they run into the water.
Well, ain't no underground railroad that way.
Okay. Them people from Haiti, even you don't even for real want to fool with no post-Jamaican slave. You understand? Them West Indies breeded a particular type of slave master, which then in point turned into a particular type of slave, one that does not get to go kick it on Sunday with, you understand, and walk a few miles to where they sold their people off. You don't get that. You don't get any type, you only get, and nobody is coming in like another neighboring state or a neighboring country looking at the practices of slave enslavement in the West Indies and whatnot to see how it was just a fresh brand of hell, unlike any other. So when you start dealing with those people, every time you talk to them, they had infused some type of incentive. You know, you couldn't deal with them. You don't put them in there with your happy slaves, if there was such a thing, because they're going to breed malcontent into the conversation. That is what I'm talking about. That is the fierce fight that we put forth, not just on this planet, that made them have to give us free, at least pretend to. I don't think, has anybody else ever, without any outside help, got themselves from being enslaved? Have you ever heard that story? A story of a people who were enslaved damn near hundreds of years, and from their own internal will within, stopped not one, not two, but virtually every other nation on the planet from enslaving them just based on the sheer will of the people. Have you heard from that from anybody else?
I have not. I have not. But Rodney's on with us now, and I'll pick his brain. Rodney, are you aware of anything like that happening? Good morning, brother.
Good morning, Brother Lee. Good morning, Sister Rashi. Actually, Rashi hits on a very good point because Toussaint Louverture, Bookman, and Dessalines were often associated with Spartacus. As a matter of fact, Toussaint Louverture was sometimes called Alexander, the new Alexander the Great, because of his efforts in fighting for their freedom. One of the things that have made black people looked up to in the rest of the world is the rest of the world knew the history of the black man better than the black man knew in America and many Americans. And they looked at the fact that we were, and I say we as members of the black community, were able to do something unlike had ever been seen in the world's history, and that was an enslaved people overthrowing their slave owners, and on a permanent basis, not just temporary, whereas Spartacus, you know, they were eventually defeated, whereas the Haitians, they were not defeated in war. There were some other defeats economically and diplomatically, but as far as them gaining their freedom, they were unique. And not only did they gain the freedom of Haitians, they also, it created a cascade effect throughout that area, and they went on to help other countries, black people, enslaved people in other countries, win their freedom.
We do that all the time. When our civil rights movement sparked the liberation of African nations from their colonizers, Nigeria is like 64, 61, 62 or something like that. Kenya is like 67, 68. Like what we did here in the United States, what we do here ricochets throughout the rest of the nation. But for that first seed, I do believe we called upon those African indigenous, they call it voodoo spirits that helped us seed the revolution that brought about us just saying nah. Like so many of us had seen someone say nah and were so afraid of the repercussions and the consequences of us just saying no to enslavement. And it sounds crazy because there is a choice. There is always death. Like you do, and I hate to say that because it sounds like a cop-out. But when your enslaver does not, I went to a whole nother room. He's following me, y'all. When your enslaver decides it's your turn and you say, no, it's not my turn, it's going to take blood. It's going to take death. Yours or his. People don't just decide, you know what, I used to enslave Lee, and he told me a couple of times it's really not his thing. Maybe next year to be my last. No, you work Lee till he dies. You work Lee till he runs. You work Lee until his body fails. That's the market. So there was no compassion built into the system. So there was no reason not to buck the system. Only thing that stopped us was wanting to live. We just wanted to live. We didn't want to be enslaved. We didn't want to live in the South. We didn't want to live like whites. We just wanted to actually live. I don't think enough people understood how much death took part on those who decided no. No. So you had to die. It was definitely live or die. And so I hate that people talk so bad about slaves too, Lee. If you really want to hear some people say some cruel shit, let them think they're talking about somebody with a slave mentality or an enslaved individual. We reserve some very cruel talk for them, but in essence, they deserve our most kindest speech. You understand? We so mad at them for being in that position. I don't think we have any respect for the slave. Do you know what I'm talking about, Lee?
I know what you're talking about. And, I don't think that, hindsight is 20/20. And, in a very different setting, you say things that are very ignorant to say, i.e., I could have never been a slave. They wouldn't have treated me like that. Well, when your ass don't have those type of options, and you can't see a way out, then you will be in the same position 9 times out of 10. So, yes, I see the disrespect, right, left, and right. But again, when you're sitting comfortably in a different time, a time that is only possible because those folks went through what they went through, and a lot of them literally laid their lives down in order for you to be able to benefit and have the ability to say what you would and what you wouldn't do. It is definitely moving, and it is reckless to come out of the mouth with it's moving when you think about what they went through, I'm sorry, and it's reckless when you come out the mouth saying what you would and would not have done had you been under those same conditions, because you're not looking at it from that angle. You're looking at it from the only perspective that you can relate to, which is your angle and your perspective. And in your angle and your perspective, you may very well stand up. There was a video I saw just the other day. It was on Twitter. And his brother was in the car, and he was napping. Well, the cops came through, and they trying to yank him out of his car and stuff like that. And this cat gets up out of his seat, and he pushes back against the cop. Well, again, that's very easy for him to do because he feels like, I'm just as much of a man as you are. You're not just going to put your hands on me. Well, that's very easy to do in 2021 when other people around you with video cameras, so on and so forth, sort of doing their best to protect you from being another statistic. But, roll that film back to 1621. Or 1641, 51, 61, and that's a very different scene that's going down right now. You roll that back to even the early portion of the 20th century in the early 1900s, and you're in the mouth of the South, deep down South, Mississippi, Arkansas, Alabama, Georgia. You're not going to do that to any white person, cop or not, because you're going to fear for your life. Most people. Some people would, no matter what. Most people are going to fear for their lives, and they're not going to try anything like that. So, no. No. Yes, to your point, absolutely. I think folks don't.
Do you know, Lee, your family member who crushed it, but your first free family member?
No, I don't. I'm actually in the process of understanding my family history better, so hopefully I can do that. But right now, no, I don't.
My first free family member's name was Adeline Mitchell. She was already in Mississippi, Sunflower County, Mississippi. She had been enslaved her entire life. She became unenslaved. She was in her 40s when mm-hmm. in 1961 when the emancipation came. Okay? She was in her 40s. Okay?
In 1861.
Sorry, 1861. So just knowing that person, go and listen to me. Go back, whoever's listening, go back and find your first free ancestor. And that will give you, I mean, if nothing else, that should give you, if you can't find love for the idea of freedom in general, try freedom specifically for your family line. Go back and find your first free ancestor. She was an awesome woman. She did have to stay on the plantation. She did not leave. Okay?
I'm sorry about that. I was trying to
talk. She had so many. I'm a family of breeders. My family, I can guarantee it. All of the women in my family have at least 5 births. I'm pretty sure we're breeders.
Then why you stop at 2?
I've been pregnant 9 times.
Ooh.
Exactly. So
that's
this
a lot
is what
of
I'm saying.
Within that hole.
That's if there's a lot, and I have a fecundity rate that's low because I actually understand the stressors of this country. So many people live here, and they're oblivious to the actual stressors of this nation. They don't have a black son that they keep in the house for fear of death. They don't have a young, beautiful black daughter that they have to remind them to keep their body just a certain way so that they don't get used for prostitutional thoughts in the minds of other people. Nobody else has to take on the stressors of the nation like black women do. And so it did have an effect on my fecundity rate, which is your rate of life of the way your children play out, dead, alive, sickly, like that. So, I know what it took for my family, I know that there's whole patches of the South that nobody tilled but my family.
Mm-hmm.
Whole patches of cotton that was only for the Mitchum plantation and that my family had to till. I cannot go back to the Southern Mitchells and ask them for any money, though. They will 100% act like they don't know what I'm talking about. Even if they have done their own lineage, they still. You think these white people don't know that their great uncles and great grandfathers were slaveholders? They know. Mm-hmm. They know. Okay? But they are not ready to say sorry for whatever came of their life, whatever privilege they have for enslavement. They don't say anything about it.
Why do you think that is?
They don't want to pay. I think it's in the contract, personally. Shut up talking. If you're going to have this money, shut up talking about it. You know? In general, like, I've always been told that discussing money is not, like, unless you're in the middle of a business deal, you shouldn't be talking about money. It's tacky, as they would say.
Okay.
But let me ask you, once you figured out who your family was enslaved under, do you intend to do anything about contacting or discussing, trying to find out any of those people? Because some people do. When they find out that they were enslaved under a family that still has a proper lineage, they go back and tell them, you know, hey, and it's in that 23andMe. They go back and say, it looks like your great-granddaddy raped the hell out of my great-great-grandmother, and we cousins now. What are we going to do? Or do we ignore it? Are you prepared to acknowledge the fact that the rape victims of your great-great-great-grandfather, they exist? That, you know, the lineage exists from that. They don't want to.
You know, that's a good question. I mean, I haven't gotten to that point yet, but that is a very good question. I don't know. I don't know. Me being the curious type that I am, I probably would do a combination of something like that. I may ask some, not others. I may ask everyone. That part really doesn't move me. I mean, I'm really more concerned with, in all honesty, how my name breaks up, because my last name is spelled A-N, and that's actually the proper spelling of the name. Well, obviously, you've seen people with just H-N, and then there is H-A-N-S, and there are other variations as well. Like Va is a variation of Vaughn as well. So, it's that type of stuff. I'm more interested in that stuff, to be honest with you. And, you know, who moved where, when, what made them move. You know, if it was a black person that was enslaved, obviously it was master, but what made the master move? Did they get into beef with their uncle, brother, son, whatever, or did they just decide this shit ain't for me no more and I want to go somewhere different and try something different? I don't know. But that right there ignites my curiosity.
Mr. Rodney.
Yes, ma'am.
Are you familiar with your first free ancestor?
Yes, ma'am.
Could you share that with us?
My first free ancestor was a man named Willis Gore, coming from the Gore plantation that was in the Carolinas that eventually became part of South Carolina once they split. His owner was William Gore, and his name was Willis Gore. He had a son named Zeno Gore, and Zeno Gore was the father of my grandmother, Victoria Gore, and I was raised by my grandmother. So Zeno Gore had been a slave on that Gore plantation who eventually was free and met someone, and that's how my grandmother came, that who raised me. I can, when I go home and I go to the family cemetery, I go to visit my grandmother's grave as well as her father's grave, Zeno Gore, who was had been a slave and became a free man.
All right. All right. That's what I'm talking about. How many of us can do that? And do you know how crucial that person was? They had to make the decision.
Right.
That's the decision maker. Like, everybody before Zeno, their decision was to live. Just make it through enslavement, right? But Zeno had to decide now that he's free, that his family is free. What is his industry? What does he do? Where does he go? Where does he live? How do they live? What do they eat? When do they eat? You understand? It went from he got no decisions to make about his family until now all the decisions, all, the fact that there is a Rodney is because Zeno said, I got to prepare a place for, I have to create something that I can build a lineage with. Zeno could have been like, hey, man, I'm finna go get me the biggest, ugliest white lady and camp back out here in this corner and kill the whole idea of an African-American lineage in that van. But no. That person who was freed, that person who was cognizant enough that they were free, they were enslaved in January 1860, and now 1861, they are free. That notion, the person who had to grapple with that, those are the heroes and sheroes of our family. they are the ones who had to not just deal with Massa, but get Massa off their back in their own mindset. They had to kill Massa from within and decide about a new life, a new way, a new family, new place, a new this. And even if it was the same old place, they had to figure out how to do it in a new way. These are our heroes. These are our sheroes.
So I love the fact that you all are that close to your family history, where, you know, you can either speak the name and or remember the embrace of that one whom was that close to the terrible condition of slavery that but again made it out and made a way. So that's freaking awesome. Real talk, Rodney. What's your take on this national holiday, bro? What you feel about this? This is the first time that the Senate been voted unanimously in almost any goddamn thing.
Lee, I see it as a victory, and I've been watching some posts and listening to some folks speak, and I was thinking about the old Olympics commercial when it talked about the agony of defeat, and sometimes it seems that which we try to snatch victory out of the jaws of defeat. And I guess you and I have been talking about this for years on our radio show. I was telling you yesterday how somebody said they were doing the first ever Juneteenth event at Nellis Air Force Base. And I wrote them back and said that I had been doing a Juneteenth celebration at Nellis Air Force Base for years, and I've been retired since 2007. And I thought that was germane to your question, because we sometimes forget our history, and forgetting our history is deadly. Not acknowledging those who made the history is deadly. So I think that having the holiday is something that people like you and I actually have worked for, whether knowingly or not, have pushed for, have talked about when no one else, when many people seem to not know about it, we helped educate them. And who knows how that seed spread that led to, and done by so many others probably before us too. So I think we have to take the victory. You have to take the win. And I don't know too many teams play in sports and say, no, I don't want that win. I'll take the L. I want it, but no, give me an L. I just don't know anybody what teams do that. So we have a huge victory that took over 100 and roughly 66 years to get. And we need to accept that victory. As a matter of fact, what we should do is do as our ancestors did and build on the victory. You know,
that's right.
First of all, let's acknowledge that they did not give us anything. They did not give us anything. This is something that was owed. And so when somebody repay you what they owe you, you don't thank them for giving you something, because they owed it to you in the first place. If anything, they should be thanking you for borrowing it, right? So
come on,
I think
Mr.
that
Rodney.
We have to change our mindset on this a little bit. And I was, you know, you asked me about my ancestors. When Zeno was freed, you know, he was still a boy. His father, Willis, he wasn't thinking about, well, I got this freedom, so this is a setup. I'm going to go back and re-enslave myself. No, what he thought about was, how can I make sure my son never goes back to this? How can
right.
we
grandson,
live
great grandson.
In this
That's
land,
right.
prosper, and thrive and not just survive, because that's all they had been allowed to do when they were allowed to do that before. So you take a victory, you celebrate the victory, you memorialize the victory, and then you go and say, now as I step up on this victory, this stack of bodies, of black bodies, that gave me this victory, that gave those blacks that gave me this victory, where am I stepping next? That's what we should be thinking. What is next? Mm-hmm. What is going to fall next? Because believe me, as you know, they didn't even want us to know about this. The president
right.
of the United States, the Republican Party, they didn't even know about this. So we bring light to this country. We are the light bearers. For those in the Masonic family, you understand where I'm going with this, right? We
I sure
have
do.
Always been the light. So let's
the
not
light.
Snuff out our own light that white people, slaveholders, were never able to snuff out. Toussaint Louverture, Bookman and Dessalines. Bookman was a voodoo priest. He prayed to their God that a day of deliverance comes, just like on Watch Night in 1863 when those slaves were waiting and praying that they would get their freedom that the folks in Juneteenth never got until June 19th. So this is Freedom Day. This is Emancipation Day. And Lee, think about this. Where you live and work in that Baltimore, Maryland area, the D.C. area, before Juneteenth, there was Emancipation Day right there in D.C. Because
yep.
remember, when Lincoln took office, he freed the slaves in D.C. So
yeah.
so freedom yeah. was something that was coming. And to Rashi's point, yeah, those what we created the environment that led to the Civil War, that led to us being somewhat free, or at least legally free. It,
yeah.
it was through all of those revolts that they never told us
That's
about
right.
in school.
The Seminole.
Remember,
That's right.
we just
Seminole
smiled,
That's right.
had that big old smile, and walked around happy-go-lucky, just a whittling, right? Well,
how you doing, sir? Good day, sir.
Hey, in Haiti, they were smiling, too. They were smiling and plotting. As a matter of fact, they were smiling and plotting so much that they used the Europeans' words to empower them. Freedom, fraternity, those were the words, equality. Those were the words that came from France, that came down to Haiti, that the white people used to, the Europeans used to speak about in front of the slaves, and they thought they were so ignorant that they didn't know what they meant. And, oh, yes, they learned the language, and they knew what it meant. And they wanted to know if the white man, if the European was talking about freedom and held it up so lofty, then why were they enslaving them? And then they used those words to empower them. And their same words, those same words. And then after the Haitians overthrew the French, and, oh, by the way, they pay homage to this in the movie Black Panther. After the Haitians overthrew the French, the Haitians did something that we need to take a lesson from right here in America as black people. You had the High Yellow Brothers, the light-skinned, you know, light-skinned people. They worked in the houses. They were the ones who served the food and the drinks. Well, they poisoned the food and the drinks. So it wasn't the light versus the dark, it was that we're all slaves, and we're going to use that light skin, that light complexion that's more acceptable by the Europeans. We're going to collectively use our gifts and talents to benefit us in this search, pursuit of freedom. And those light-skinned sisters and brothers poisoned those Haitian, those French soldiers in Haiti, the French leadership in Haiti, weakened them using their knowledge that they bought from Mother Africa on what plants would cause hallucination and put them to sleep. See, they used their collectiveness, That's what we have to do, is we have to use our collectiveness, not look at our differences as something to fight about, but something to rejoice and use to our benefit. So that the Haitians taught us a lesson. That going back to your question earlier, when those Haitians revolted using the words of the Europeans in French against them, that was a shockwave, because it had never happened, to Rashi's point, in the history of the world. That sent a shockwave through the entire Northern Hemisphere and the North American continent. And so then, from then on, white people, slaveholders, were fearful of revolts of slaves. And then they even treated in North America, they treated slaves even worse, because they were determined to beat them down, to keep them so weak that they could never do what happened in Haiti. And even that fired on them, because it only made their minds stronger. They broke their bodies. We know about buck breaking, right? But it never broke their minds. You cannot enslave a person totally just by shackling his feet and his hands. It is the mind that is always free and was always free during slavery. So we need to keep it free now and keep pushing and building on this victory for the next victory.
Talk on it, Ronnie. Speak on it, brother. Speak on it. I want to tell you how important it is for us to know that fighting, we have never, like somebody from outside our culture might think we were happy, easy, enslaved people. There was no point in our captiveness that we didn't fight back. We fought back at the shores of Africa, okay? We fought back on the ship on the way here. Either we intentionally drowned ourselves or we tried to take over the boat. We fought back as soon as we got to the shores. We fought back in those cabins, tucked away in those slave cabins. We fought back. We are still fighting. The fight is still here. Anybody who thinks that this is just rhetoric, like black people like to feel separate, or we feel like important if we feel like we have anti-white importance. And I've heard that before. Your power comes from just not wanting to be white. Anybody who has reduced us to folks who were cool with enslavement, they need to really go and do some work. There is no step. There is no point that we didn't fight back. And affirmative action is a part of that fight back. Like you said earlier, the right to vote without having to be voted upon in Congress is a part of that fight. The right to acknowledge that we are no longer – Juneteenth ain't even for us, for real. For real, for real, we've been doing it. We've been having Emancipation Day, Jubilee Day, Juneteenth Day. We have been morphing this idea of freedom, celebration of freedom, since before we were even for real properly, quote, unquote, free. Juneteenth is for white people. Juneteenth is yet another time when they get to get a history lesson. Every time we celebrate our identity, what we do is provide a free history lesson to those who don't know anything about black culture, because you don't have to know anything about black culture to survive in America. For those who are blissfully ignorant about the history of black Americans and African Americans in this country, pay attention to our holidays. Listen to our holiday reason, because then you get to figure out what's going on, and you don't feel like we being so hyperbolic when we get excited over the idea of the world acknowledging that black people in America have in fact been deemed free. If you look at the news, if you look at our condition, if you listen to the United Nations, we're still not free. So the day saying, yes, they are, at least puts it in the mindset of the nation. Hey, you're dealing with free people.
You shooting up free people. You're about to kill a free teenage boy. You're about to molest and rape a free teenage little black girl. You're about to disenfranchise economically a free black family. You're about to deny this job to a free black man. You're about to give substandard medical care to a free black baby. That's what we're trying to put in the mindsets of these people. Not that we don't know we free. They don't know. Juneteenth is with them, not us.
I dig where you're coming from, but, you know, if be it from them or for us, we still have the responsibility to know what the hell it's about and honoring it because it is about us. And it's sad, as Rodney said, you know, we've been doing this work for some time. There's a lot of people out here that have no clue as to what Juneteenth is, was, or what have you. You know, they have no clue that it took the Western Army of the Trans-Mississippi dang near 2 years after the surrender of Lee at Appomattox to surrender to Union forces. They have no idea that it was General Order 3 read on the balcony of a hotel by Union General Granger that told the slaves in Texas that they were free. They have no idea about that. But, you know, they'll go to Galveston, the party, but they don't understand the history of that city. So it's important that our history isn't washed away. It's important that we challenge the notion that we can have a holiday, as we were just given, but we can't tell folks in our school system why the holiday exists, because you can't teach about critical race theory in schools. That's the push going on right now. So, again, be it about them or about us, it's important that we recognize that this is for us, it is about us, and we need to honor it. We need to honor this day. And it's not just about a T-shirt and a hat. It's not about that, man. It's about living that mode. It's about walking that walk and living that walk.
How do you celebrate Juneteenth? How should we be celebrating Juneteenth? Because it ain't, we shouldn't be getting drunk and eating barbecue. Look, we shouldn't be getting drunk, high, and passing out on high-calorie meals. That's not how you celebrate Juneteenth.
Unity in the community, you know, this is another perfect day to sit back with some folks, put your talents together, and rebuild our communities.
So it's a day of service.
Block by block, house by house, community by community, person by person. Share some information. Put something together, be it a training course or a training school. You know, I was telling Rodney yesterday, I was just hip to two schools. Well, not two schools. One school, one. Well, it is two schools. Two schools and one program. One school and one program are here in Baltimore. The other school opened in Detroit. My man, you know, my cousin, Van the Man Ringo, he just got approval from the Federal Board of Education, Department of Education, to start a full-fledged training program in HVAC work, boilermaker training. That's a power move. Young lady here just opened up a training center for basement boys. Basement boys are the people that go in and they build out the infrastructure from the basement level on up. Now, they usually stop when they get to the on-up part, but they specialize in building basements. You know, so, you know, if there's a garage, and the garage has two different levels to it. Underground,
so are you advocating,
they were the folks who came in and built.
Are you advocating a Booker T. Washington-esque day of training for June, for the weekends of Juneteenth, for the days of 17, 18, 19? Because technically that's Juneteenth, 17th, 18th, and 19th.
No, what I'm advocating for is that the same thing you're doing, that you said. No, we don't sit around and get high on alcohol, weed, or anything else. We sit around and we build and we lay foundations to bring back our community, be it a conversation about debt, be it a conversation about money management, be it a conversation about investment, be it a conversation and a tour about how to build, how to buy your first house, how to fix your credit. It doesn't matter. Something that's going to help rebuild the community. That's what I'm advocating for. What do you think, Rashi? How do you think it should be spent?
Mr. Rodney, can you go first, please? How do you think Juneteenth should be celebrated? What kind of activity should we be doing on Juneteenth?
Well, Rashi, you actually hit on a piece of it or one aspect of it earlier when you talked about knowing your family's lineage. I think this is a great opportunity for us to understand our families a little bit better because of so much misinformation and disinformation that's gone out. You know, Lee talked about it earlier about how people say, oh, well, if I was back then, I would do this or I would do that. Or they would talk about, you know, I'm not your, you know, I'm not my grandfather. You know, you do this to me, I'm going to do this or that. And I think those people missed the point of how strong our ancestors, maybe some elders still today, how strong they were to deal with the things that they had to deal with so that we could be in a position today of pushing our country forward. I also think that education, and you're an educator, has to be a key part of this, because even though this is a national holiday and it has more publicity now than ever, there's still a bunch of folks, white, black, and others, who still don't know actually what Juneteenth is and its significance. It's still not really taught in our schools. As a matter of fact, just the opposite is taught in our schools. What I would like to see beyond that is I do think there should be some free, open, genuine celebration, because we're talking about the legalized end of enslavement for our people. But when it gets down to the brass taxes, our people have never been just the people. You know, the Buffalo Soldiers, they would go out and fight, come back, dance most of the night and party. And the white soldiers could not understand how these men, because then they saw them as men because they could fight with guns, right? To go out and fight all day, come back and party most of the night, get a few hours of sleep, and come back the next day and outfight them. So celebration is a part of who we are. But on the other side, on the part that I was telling Lee about how we have to build on it, that education piece, we have to undo probably the greatest PSYOPs activity in the history of this country, and maybe one of the greatest in the history of this world. And we have to undo what the United Daughters of the Confederacy and others are still doing to this day. And that's pumping out the misinformation and disinformation about history, about slavery. Think about how romanticized the Alamo has been in our history and in media. Well, I don't know if people realize that the Alamo wasn't just about freedom for Texas, because when the Texans first came down to Texas, which was a Mexican-held territory, they were in kind of like invited in by the Mexicans. It wasn't until Austin went to Texas, because he wasn't from Texas, The whole purpose of him going to Texas, even though the Mexicans were anti-slavery, keep in mind that in East Texas, Germans had settled in East Texas, and they called it New Germany, and they were anti-slavery. The reason why I mentioned the Germans and anti-slavery in Texas is because there is history of, believe it or not, Germans being against slavery and fighting alongside black people against enslavers. The Haitian Revolution, remember when they established their country? No Europeans were allowed to own land in Haiti except for one group, and that was the Germans. That was the only one, because they supported the Haitian Revolution and Haitians' freedom. Well, that history ties us together and is hugely important. So just because so many people don't know the full history of this country and really the full history of the world, which black people, Africans, people of African descent play a major role, is I would like for the next push, Lee, this, and it's something that you and I and others have been doing for a while, and you've heard me talk about it. Folks who've listened to your show and listened to my show have heard me talk about it. This next push and what we should do on Juneteenth is educate our people and others on the history of us, because it's really the history of this country and the world. And the next big move we should be pushing for, I believe, is to integrate and incorporate African/African-American history and culture throughout all curriculum in publicly funded schools, K-12, and institutions of higher learning like colleges and universities. If that has to be the next goal, that's what I would like to see us expanding this victory on, because ignorance is not bliss. Ignorance is insurrection on 1/6. Ignorance is supporting voter suppression in a country whose foundational principle is one person, one vote. So, yes, that party, have a good time, celebrate, but we have to educate and we have to push for true history to be taught throughout every curriculum in every grade at every level of academic pursuits in this country.
I agree. But now, Mr. Rodney, on an applicable level, because like you said, I'm an educator, right? So we at the faculty end of the year luncheon, all right? So, I mean, I will agree, I'm a little bit incendiary. I'm not going to play games. I sit amongst my all-white colleagues, and I ask them, not if they will be teaching CRT, but how will you be introducing concepts of critical race theory? We're talking about I'm pretty much directly talking to 2 fourth grade teachers. Critical time in a person's young life. All right, 3rd, 4th, and 5th grade is where the real magic happens. I asked them, how are you going to incorporate critical race theory into your curriculum? When I tell you I could hear cockroaches fart in a janitor's closet, you don't understand. The actual practice of putting in there what happened brings so many questions in the hearts and minds of these students that they are not prepared. It's not, are you going to put it in there? It's, are you ready for the barrage of questions that fall from said information? And the thing I love about children is they're dethroners. Like, if you don't know the answer, it takes away from your importance, okay? You can't keep telling children, I don't know, I don't know, I don't know. They'll put you into an I don't know person, and you'll stop being where they go to for information. If you want to stay valid in the hearts and minds of children, you're going to have to teach them why. Why in the world would somebody throw a brick in the back of Martin Luther King's head and then later shoot him? And then, because they don't teach that part. They teach his freedom march. They teach all that. But they don't really teach that he was killed by a white man. Okay? They don't understand why it was important were to call the police on this black lady sitting in the wrong seat, what do you mean the wrong seat? You have to explain to them seats for these people and seats for that people. They won't understand. You tell a child today on the bus, go back to the back, you can't sit up here. They're like, why? You try to explain, because you black and we don't let black people sit up here. It's, I think I've talked about this before, Mr. Rodney, about the trainings they used to do with SNCC where you could go into a restaurant where they trained you to have people squirt mustard on you and spit on you and pour coffee on you, and you're supposed to sit there nonviolently. Them people gone. Like, that generation of people who could sit there and take mustard being squirted on them and stuff, those people are gone. And so this new reactionary, hey, not me, I can be a slave, you won't do that to me, people, they have no historical reference on what it takes to persevere through hatred. So what we're asking them to do with teaching CRT is to teach what it means to overcome hatred, what it means to teach through hatred. You have to teach not this war happened, but this war happened because China did not think Tibetans were actually different people. They wanted to make sure Tibet, that population, did not come under use for any other non-communist nation. So they have to, in essence, enslave Tibetans, enslave people from Hong Kong, you know, so that they can keep them under their regime. You have to teach enslavement. You have to teach what it means to make, subjugate. You have to make somebody understand that, and they just don't get it. I cannot explain colonization to my son. He's like, you in your country, right? Yes. Then some other people come to your country. Yes. They don't know your country very well. No. Then they find a way to make it illegal for you to go to some places in your country. Yes. How? How do you do that? And I have to explain, you kill everybody who step foot on it. One by one, you shoot them all in the head, and everybody who dares step foot on it dies. And then they figure it out. Don't go there. And nobody comes to stop them from killing everybody who touches that piece of land. Well, they kill them too. And they keep killing till you have North and South Sudan. And they keep killing until you have, you know, until you have the border of the American continent down there by Arizona, where you can kill people coming out of the Mexican deserts like that. You can shoot them talking about standing your ground. I want to know how we are going to teach. If we're going to teach CRT, Mr. Rodney, how are we going to explain to them, yeah, if you go there, they're going to shoot you in the head, and they have found a way to make it legal. How are we going to do this?
Sister Rossi, I think that maybe we're making this, I'm not going to try to diminish the effort that's going to be needed to do this, but at the same time, we know how it can be done because there's an example of the Daughters, United Daughters of the Confederacy, who've done it just in the opposite vein for over 160 years. And that is, you have to take control or get involved in the committees and commissions that determine what the curriculum is that a particular school district is going to teach. We have to get involved, like the United Daughters of the Confederacy, on the book commissions and committees that choose the books for our schools. It's many more of us than it is of them, exercise the power. We have to sort of do what Toussaint Louverture did. What Toussaint Louverture did, he said, you know, he held up a gun and said, this is your freedom. In other words, where is the source of power? Because the source of power wasn't from the white man's body who came into those countries and colonized them. It was in pretty much the power of the gun, technology. Well, there's no greater technologist in this country than black people. So there's many ways that we can do it. we have to believe it that we can do it, like those Haitians. We have to believe that we can do it and go about the business of doing it. Also, we're sort of in the driver's seat here. We have more white people asking questions now about blackness than ever before. Don't turn your back on them. Don't tell them they should know, because I always ask my black brothers and sisters, when did you know? But I can tell you, when I was talking about Juneteenth for decades, most of us didn't know. When I was talking about Tulsa and black
people,
most black people didn't know. So
didn't
let's not become like our oppressor and become haughty with our knowledge and sort of grab onto it and hold it. No, knowledge is meant to be shared. And in the words of the late, great Sam Smith, it should be done freely. And we have to continually push that those who are close to us know. I mean, do we even educate those white people that are the closest to us? I don't know. But if we don't know, that's something we can do on Juneteenth. That should be a part of the celebration. But the biggest part is, think about, you all just visited my state, Nevada, that played a key role in defeating the South during the Civil War. Most people don't even know that. That's ignorance. Ignorance is killing us. For those who are religious, you know, it says lack of knowledge, right? Well, that lack of knowledge by us, but lack of knowledge by white people, and misinformation that they've been given over these years. We have to reverse that. If we do not reverse it, then every year we will graduate, as you all have heard me say on this show before, a new class of white supremacists in May and June, because our educational system, our schools are white supremacy madrasas. You cannot kill this thing that is the scourge of the land and of the world, white supremacy and white patriarchy. You cannot kill it without teaching the truth. You know, you say the truth will set us free. Well, Bookman, Dessalines, and Toussaint Louverture used that same truth that those French Europeans were teaching other French people. They used that to empower their own people and get earn their own freedom. And I'm saying, Rashi, we're going to have to do the work. We have a president who can use federal dollars and, to be quite frank, blackmail, let me change that, bribe states that if you want these federal dollars, you need to include in your curriculum African/African-American history and culture of the world and of this country. There is one very strong arm tactic. I read something the other day that says, look, it's time to take off the velvet gloves and put on the boxing gloves of these white supremacists, because they throw in dough blows trying to knock us out, and we walking around here all prissy with these velvet gloves on. No, we need to knuckle up. And part of that knuckling up, I don't necessarily mean physically unless it actually came to that, but what I'm talking about is we have to play like we really believe this stuff, and we have to push our white allies, we have to push them to do more, and we have to do it, Rashi. Otherwise, just delaying the inevitable new class of young people that become white supremacists.
The actual way that, now, you know, I'm about applicability. So the only way I've been able to even get into that is the sharing of activities that have CRT embedded or buried in the activity itself. So that is truly the only way I've been able to influence my cohorts to consider really teaching anything beyond, you know, inclusivity for Latinos. Because most of our curriculum, believe it or not, is not about the inclusiveness of African Americans or the descendants of slaves, but Hispanic Americans and how we can make our society more Hispanic friendly. So how they're doing that is like the suggested reading for the whole sixth grade will be about a Esperanza Rising, a Hispanic girl coming out of her Mexico into America. So, but nothing about the historic, not Native Son, not nothing about our migration, not anything about, you know, what it was like to try to be literate in a time when it was illegal. None of that. I think if you would teach young people that our being able to read in public freely and encouraged is actually a new thing, so that we would not hurt each other and down each other for being uninformed, because that's in up until recently, in the last 100 years, it's been the law that we not be informed. So our ability to be like, yeah, you know, I don't know. Shit, nigga, I don't know nothing about that. That's not just our pride. That's used to be how we saved our own lives, is not by not knowing nothing about that.
A defense
so when
mechanism.
You say, huh?
Defense mechanism.
It's a defense mechanism. So when you say education, educate ourselves, educate yourself, I always get nervous because the amount of misinformation out there is scary. And then when you do get a hold to the good stuff, it's revolutionary. It makes you, it turns you into a certain kind of person. Yes, but usable in the liberation struggle. Yes, able to share information that helps, but also almost like unhireable. I hate to explain. I don't know how to explain it, but once you on a certain side of the liberation struggle, meaning you acknowledge it, you take it in, you're fighting with it, you're doing things actively to push against the old tenets of enslavement, you become a subculture of people, a subculture of people who are willing to say, no, I don't want Harriet Tubman on a $20 bill because it ain't worth nothing, and she is worth something. Our freedom fighter liberator is worth more than this fiat currency that's getting more and more devalued by the day. But when you explain that to people, you become subculture. Lee, Rodney, as black men with guns, multiple guns, able to use them, you know, even if you were trained by the military. Your Gosh. Subculture, huh?
You can't put the game out like that.
That was too much?
Yeah,
you all are subculture. In fact, having a black agenda group that where you're trying to find tenets and principles, Mr. Rodney, so that we can just hold on to a particular code that helps us navigate white racism pathology, You subculture. You have officially become outside of what the picket fence, the white picket fence, the beautiful blended family, the dog, the 2.5 children, the guy who's ready to pay his taxes, and you're not that guy anymore. So this is what we're telling people when we say celebrate Juneteenth. Celebrate 4th of July, too, if you have to, but also understand as an African-American that there was 4 years difference, right, between the actual proclamation of us being free and the end of the Civil War that it took to make it enacted. We're not talking about a whole bunch of people who were able to walk off their jobs, throw down their hoes, put the cotton down, pick up their knapsacks and walk away. This did not happen in a day or a weekend or a year. This country was so entrenched on free black labor that it took almost half a decade and a war, a bloody civil war, that had been already stoked by, like you said, Mr. Rodney, insurrections and what do they call that down in the ones in Florida.
Seminole.
I'm sorry, the Seminole. Yes, the Seminole rebellions, the Seminole revolts. All that had to go down in order for us to do even what we're doing now. So the reason why I think it is important we celebrate, one, by getting information. You ask me, what is it going to take? What do I think it takes to celebrate Juneteenth? One, we definitely need to inform ourselves maybe year by year. Start at 1619. If you just now start in Juneteenth, start at 1619, then go 1620 next year and see how many years you can get forward until you understand what the true liberation struggle in this country was. For those who are more informed, go back to colonization and the removal of people from their country back before. Go back before and see what the Africans have written about the historical colonization of their country and the removal of humans from their country. That might get you a better understanding of Juneteenth. Secondly, in my opinion, you say, yes, celebrate, Mr. Rodney, but I think it's time for us to remove some of these pathologies from our community. So I would like to use Lent as a de facto, Juneteenth as a de facto Lent. Juneteenth up into 4th of July. From Juneteenth to the 4th of July should be a day of sacrifice. Maybe it's service. Maybe it's the removal of drugs or something from your life. Maybe it's where you wasn't talking to this particular family member. Now you have to strike up some kind of communication. I feel like that period between Juneteenth and the 4th of July is just enough time for us to read a decent book on a subject or some type of sacrifice or service. Just like you said, Lee, we do something or for our community in that 2-week, 3-week, how many days is that, Lee, from June 17th to the 4th of July? That's about 2 or 3 good weeks, ain't it?
That's 2.5 weeks, roughly 2.5 weeks.
Take that 2.5 weeks. That's when we do. If you know you've been eating a whole bunch of hot oxtails and hot flaming Cheetos, you do some caloric restriction. You know, that's when we plant our garden, right? That's when we start taking our power out of our local grocer's hand and putting it back into the soil. That's when we can do, you know, like you say, treat it like Kwanzaa. Rodney, do a family reunion around that time. Get your people together to rally around some mission, some cause. It's a lot we can do with that time, that one and a half, 2 weeks. And I think we should start turning into that.
Why you always want to get people to read? Every time we talk about something, you read a book. You know, people ain't reading no books no more. It's all about the Kindle.
They are reading. They reading Facebook blogs. They reading. They reading the first 3 paragraphs of a Facebook or Instagram article that pop up. So what we have to do now is try to tailor some historical information to an Instagram pop up article with a link to the real.
That would be sweet.
Put a really fat ass picking cotton, right?
Wow.
And then they're gonna be like, "What is that?" And then they click on it, and then they go into some kind of historical thing where,
They got me.
We need to start historically rickrolling these niggas, right? So that when they click on it, they think they go into porn, but in fact they go into some kind of real serious information about what it takes for them to even be included in the porn industry. Because that was hard to get black people in the porn industry. That was a whole niche that you had to pay for back in the day. We didn't even have our own genre. So just little things. Information is power, Lee. We have to read, because if you don't read paper, that means nobody had to really do a proper editorial process. What you get in paper product is somebody had to read that shit after the writer did, and then somebody read it after that person. Then somebody approved it for fact or scandability or libel or slander. Mm. And then now you get to read something that way. When you read information the way we take it in nowadays, because, you know, we read in Death Row's Diary, I call it.
And what are we getting from that?
And we work
a whole
that.
Bunch of nothing.
We go on from that. We go on from that in order to create a whole scandal. We create whole ideas about how we the bonnet. Here we go. That whole thing we going on now with the bonnet scandal. That's from mm-hmm. Jethro's diary.
How so?
Well, what's the point? This is one of the things we were talking about in Las Vegas, and I'm glad we were able to curtail that conversation in the business. But one of the things I wanted to talk to you and Mr. Rodney about is this idea of respectability.
Mm.
There's a lot that we're asking people mm. to do that has a lot to do with us being seen respectable in the eyes of other people. And it's hard to broach this conversation with y'all because y'all military men. And so much of what happens in a military man's life, his uniform, how his uniform has to look, when he has to show
yep.
up, how he has to show up, is about the respectability of some other higher up authority that goes even higher than him, that goes even higher than him, that goes into some weird infinitesimal ether.
You ain't lied about that.
So when I tell
you,
that it's 100% okay to see, you know, a woman in a bathing suit in the airport, you're like, what the hell are you talking about?
Yeah,
and what
I
would like for our listeners, okay, what I would like for our listeners to think about is who's watching? Who's this moral authority watching? Is it you? Is it your inner self from being indoctrinated watching? Who do you think is really watching? Because whoever's watching got the ability to wake up that morning and do what they thought was important on their physical self. And I would like for us to be more open to that, that around you there's going to be a plethora of people who are off the spectrum of what you think are acceptable. And I want you to hear that it's okay.
Hmm. You know you want a whole damn lot. Well, I will say this to you. You know, to your point and to your credit, you can't please everybody. And if you go out to please everybody, you're not going to please anybody. I understand that. However, we are not in a position where, unfortunately, we are not in a position where we get judged by our individual selves. We are still in the position where we get jumped as a group. We get judged as a group. So as a representative of you, I will make sure that I do my damnedest to always be on my P's and Q's so that you are not judged negatively by anything that I do and or say. And I would ask if you would do the same in return, in kind. Again, right, wrong, or indifferent, that's what it is. That's where we are
but
in this place
who?
Called America.
Judge negatively by who?
Society
this
in
is
general.
This is what I love about Toni Morrison. She called it. She named it. She named it. She called it the white gaze. The white gaze. We can't be
okay.
out here looking wild and crazy in front of who?
Society in general.
Society in general.
Right.
Right? Who Correct. Has been trained and indoctrinated by Anglo-Christian theology.
Correct.
What their cultural norms are. We talked about that before, right? The things we
mm-hmm.
do that we just do because other people is doing them. We use bleach because mm-hmm. other people, the people who colonized us, use bleach. We shampoo our hair because white people shampoo their hair. There's no reason for us to shampoo our hair. We do a lot. We wear suits because white people wear suits.
Okay, and your point?
What I'm saying is if we take away all right, our need to appease the cultural gaze,
mm-hmm.
There's a lot of behavior that we are condemning each other for that would just roll off our backs like duck on a water back, man. It would just roll off. It would be nothing to us if we weren't trying to create a reality where it was okay for us to be individualistic. Meaning, even me, when I get ready to put on makeup, do I put it on like a cultural Africana woman with dots on my cheeks, with a dot? You understand the difference between when you're putting on makeup as an African tribal woman and when you're trying to get cute to go to a club in Kansas City?
I do not know that because I'm not a woman, so
honestly, there is
that.
A difference. The make. When okay. you wear makeup as an Africana woman, the makeup is right there on top of your face. Your face is white or red. The white makeup or dots on your cheeks or even scarification where you embed beads up under the skin. That's what beauty is there. Beauty here is our lips are red looking because we just got through, you know.
Popping.
Okay, and our cheeks are rosy, and we have some kind of color above the eyes that kind of make our lashes long. Like, our beauty standards are not Africana standards. You understand that?
Correct.
But, so, now, when we start being true to ourselves, which is what I would like Juneteenth to be, is a systematically reclaiming tradition.
Okay.
What I mean by that, if right now you are sitting in a chair getting a perm, let them wash that shit out and then never come back. Never come back to have somebody make your hair do something that it don't already do. Unless it's absolutely necessary for your lifestyle. If not, make those people, you know, deal with that. All right, Mr. Rodney, you want to deal with Vegas? Let's do it. One of the things I didn't like is to be a gun.
To be what?
I thought that the idea of black people dealing with arms is one of our problems. They see us taking up arms and taking to the streets. But you know what? My trip to Vegas has let me know we absolutely must need to understand arms to take them up and at least know how to use them if that time comes.
You see all them other people out there while we were out there?
I did see, and I saw the weaponry they had, and I saw that they were training babies younger than my son.
Babies.
There were children in there that I'm pretty sure had to go to two or three bathroom breaks.
Babies.
And so, yes, Mr. Rodney, in the spirit of Vegas, there are even things there that I did there that I absolutely have never done before. But I find them now necessary to how we're going to change our ideology. And one of them is reclaiming. We used to be arms people. Back in the day when you knew them people was coming down the way because y'all had celebrated, they knew you was getting money or your land was flourishing or something was happening. They were coming to destroy. We had our arms, and little boys knew how to shoot.
Mm-hmm.
We may need to go back to that. We need to go back to making our own food. I think Juneteenth need to be a go-back day, okay? Not necessarily always education, maybe one day of education for the future, one day where you go back to remember the traditions of the past, and one day of fellowship where you meet people like we did when they finally let us be free and we were able to travel to find those loved ones that they had sold off into enslavement in other places. That's my answer. That's my idea of Juneteenth. Learning something about the past, either by education, reading, or some tradition you take on and learn. Figuring out some information that will help us with the future. And enjoying your network that you finally get to actually kick it with your loved ones. In a way that you couldn't back then after they sold your family away. I did have a fantastic time in Vegas and Lee. I just need to thank you because nobody else saw really how hard I worked last semester. It was a very trying semester. I went from hybrid learning. It was a hybrid season. I started off virtually and had to go into the classroom.
I did not have sufficient PPE. I did not have a employer who understood how important it was for us to stay optimally sanitized. And so when you provided the chance for me to vacation after that, it hit a reset button in my mind to let me know that even with struggle, you do get a moment to sit there in the sun, right? But more importantly, I was trained. I want to thank you for the time that you and Mr. Rodney spent training me at the gun range. It was actually a zenith moment for me. It was a nadir moment, is what they called, because I'm actually an anti-gun person. I have habitually been somebody who really don't like firearms, and to the point where I have asked police to please come outside of my home because he was brandishing a firearm, and I don't like firearms in my home. And so to be someone who stopped being a bystander, stopped looking at other people, and accepted the training, mostly because I was being trained by the right people, right? Someone whose lifestyle it was at one point, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that training, it let me know that I can't afford to be anti-gun. I cannot, in today's America, afford to be anti-gun. And that's a wake up call, as Paul Mooney is. So it was a nigga wake up call. And I just want to thank you for being there as a mentor to show me that it's not all Nino Brown and what's happening in Chicago, and you know, there is a right way and there is a necessary way. Not right or wrong. It is necessary, and so there is a way to do it right.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I just want to thank you, Mr. Rodney. Next time we come, I don't know what you're hiding in that apartment or in that place you live, but they're coming in there. I don't know what's in there. Whatever Filipino lady you got in the basement tied to a chain, you're going to have to let her go. We coming up in that apartment next time I come to Vegas, Mr. Rodney. You understand?
Right. She talking about running up in the spot, bro. That's crazy. But look, I wanted to talk about that, son, because, you know, this was overdue. I'm sorry. He dropped off. I got to get him back on. He tapping me on the shoulder. Man, get me on. You on. So I wanted to talk about that trip because it was definitely overdue. And I apologize to you, Rashi, as I said before. You know, I should have took you out with me the first go around. That was definitely an oversight. I was just so pumped up to get the hell away that it really didn't register the way it should have. So I had to make it up to you. And what better way to include Brother Barry? And we just had a good old time. So I'm looking forward to the next go around. Maybe Rodney, throw some meat on the grill. You know, we can really cook it like we did back at the Coon, but it was good to go shooting. My life is about to change once again, which is a good thing for the show, very good thing for the show, and a good thing for me. So I'm looking forward to that. I was building with Rodney about that the other day, and we got some work to do. I mean, the work isn't over. The work isn't finished. We're still going to hit it week in and week out and continue to bring you the news as we see it and discuss it and bring it out and, you know, put people in positions and explain their position. And hopefully we will continue to get some great information out there because it's necessary. And there's so many people out here who still don't know. And I'm looking forward to helping them figure it out. So that's where that is, you know. But Rodney, she threatened to run up in the spot, bro. She must not know what you got up in there. I told her, be careful.
Hey, Lee, when you had me on before you unmuted me, that was exactly what I said that you all didn't hear, was be careful for running up into my spot because you've seen a little bit of what I got.
Hey, man, listen. I got people calling me Mr. Roddy talking about, I said, hey, I am a bystander. I have nothing to say about what I saw, but I saw it.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm going to make my way, because when I get done, I say, if anything happened, I'm making my way to Vegas. I know only one place that me and my son are going to be able to post up just at least for a few minutes. Mr. Rodney, what I'm talking about, though, is that we were able to come visit you, but we didn't visit in your space. And I want you to understand your role as our mentor. You hearken back to Mr. Sam a lot, and that's good, but in my opinion, you are the elder of this group. You are the mentor, and a lot of your wisdom, the wisdom that comes from you, is actionable and what we use in order to keep ourselves true. It's, you know, the moral, one of the moral compasses of this show. So when we say we want to come in, we're trying more to get to know you. We want to know what kind of brother puts his nation ahead of, you know, it's some of your compadres are still out here searching for 20, 30-year-old women. You understand? They out here with their hat to the back, you know, in track suits, trying to figure out a younger man's life. What you have done is accept where you are, and you're ready now to, like you said during our meeting, pass the baton. It is a fool who does not put himself in the place to get that lead. Of course, you were there to touch it first, but I'm hoping in time that someone who's not necessarily a veteran but sees the cause like me is able to grab the baton, even from you, Lee, or partially, you know, have Lee, have Rodney. However it works. The dissemination of information is where it's at. You understand? And y'all doing it. Y'all doing it. Y'all putting it out there. And I am, can't tell you that I wasn't a little worried after that meeting. If somebody was less cognizant of what could happen in the future, they would think that that was a meeting to see what was going to happen with our conglomeration.
No.
When I express to you all that I am in it, meaning I will write articles, I will do interviews off mic, I will join in events, I will introduce the ideology of journalism and the struggle into the classroom. I will do whatever it takes. The message that you all have embedded into me alive. Here in Kansas City, okay? So
right.
I don't want you all to think that what we're embarking on is little. The idea of black press, black media, black journalism is actually, it's relatively new. Our voice has not always been heard or heeded or even thought important. To be thinking of our own voices as something that might not exist in the future, it frightens me. Mm. I need everyone who's out there to listen that this is not some government endeavor. Somebody has decided, some peoples have decided that our voices, our opinion, our take on things that are happening around the world are important. They put their money on it. They put their money literally where their mouth is.
Yep.
And so please, when you capture our broadcast, when you listen to our blog, which is technically what we are, a blog. Well, no, we don't have many videos, but we need to work on that. Capture us. You capture us developing or becoming. We're not done. our own voices is not done. Real radio is not done. The rant is not done. Our journalistic magazine is not done. Whatever we have going on, it's not finished, only because y'all did the work. You infused people like Mr. Barry and me and probably several others who are ready. We're ready to do this work. So please, Mr. Rodney, don't think that you're reaching that baton back and all you see is one guy, Lee. No, sir. No, sir. You see quite a few people in the shadow, but you will see us soon, all ready to receive what you have built. And I appreciate that, Mr. Rodney, and I just want to thank you.
That's what's up. Rodney, you crying over there?
Yeah, I got to get the tissue and everything.
I think
Rashi, the idea of our own voices, it was to be a vehicle that takes us someplace, that launches us someplace. But it wasn't supposed to be just me going for the ride. It was a vehicle that had many seats for many people to ride. And sort of like the Flintstones car where your feet hanging out, the more feet you get in, you have hanging out, right? Further you can go and the faster you can go. So it's like all aboard that's coming aboard, but we leave it at 8, and if you've missed that 8 o'clock, then you have to wait till the next go round or meet us at the next station, right? So, and as far as the baton, I did a couple of shows, radio shows about passing the baton. That analogy is we have to go. The person that's leading, for whatever reason, they're the ones in front, right, running the first leg of the race, they have an obligation to reach back, with that baton. But it's the people that's behind the one in the lead that also has an obligation to snatch the baton. Well, when I'm running and when Sam was running, Sam was looking straight ahead. And when he reached the baton back and I snatched it, I got the baton. Well, Sam taught me a vital lesson because not that many years later, Sam joined the ancestors. Well, had he not passed the baton when he did, then the gathering that's been going on for over 13 years may not have reached that milestone. We may not have the reading clubs. We may not have a lot of the things that the statue cleanup, the shooting club, just so many different things that sprung from that. So, yes, whoever is running that first leg has an obligation to reach back, but the people who are coming up, they have an obligation to snatch it, and then it's their turn to run with it. And simply what I'm saying is, here it is. I'm still running, but you need to, whoever it is,
I
need
now.
To snatch it.
I saw it now.
So, also, one more thing is, Rashi, I appreciate your kind words. And when a person is deceased, usually their name lives on for about 5 years after they have transitioned into the afterlife. On that six-year mark, that name tends to be buried like the individual. The way that you keep that person's ideas and thoughts alive and their name alive is you have to keep invoking that name. It's a part of our lineage that you mentioned on reaching back and knowing who our ancestors were. Well, we have to do that with people in our communities too. Because then we might wind up repeating something that was already done by those who came before us, like the person who said they're doing the first Juneteenth event ever at Nellis Air Force Base in 2021, and it was being done more than a decade before that. So we have to invoke the names of those who came before us and keep them alive because they're still teaching us to this day. And we should still be willing to learn those lessons and not shut ourselves off to them, or we may find ourselves wasting time relearning things, redoing things that were already done. And I never want anybody to think that this that we have was created by me, because that would be taken away from the legacy of Sam. I'm just a caretaker. But what he did do was give me an opportunity to infuse myself into what he's doing, and hopefully from learning from him and my life's experiences, adding on so it's more acceptable to people in my age range, just as you and Lee speak in a way differently than me, then attract people that I may not attract. So thank you, but, you know, we all play our role.
That's what's up. You know, if you haven't seen the video, there's plenty of video of us going out there shooting and having a good old time. And it was a good time. You know, my shoulder's getting a heck of a lot better. As I told Rodney, you know, I sleep on that side, so I'm getting older. I wasn't thinking about that when I went out there and shot that damn pump shotgun he has. But it was a great time. It was a great time to be had by all. Rashi even got on the shotgun a little bit and squeezed a couple off.
If I can
off
explain to you how amazing that is to get a shotgun in my hand, you don't understand.
Yeah, I think we
get
on that.
And that's right. And that's right, Mr. Raleigh. Mother Tolan was a fantastic part of my trip. Let me tell you, I actually see myself in Mother Tolan. Helen Tolan, the first black female principal in probably all of Nevada, but definitely Las Vegas. I looked around her house and all her books and all her African sculptures, and I saw myself, my 95-year-old self, you know. I appreciate that, Mr. Rodney, because that was one of the few times that I could see myself into the future. And I said, oh, yeah, when I looked at how much stuff we had in common, how much of our library we shared, how many of our tales we shared. Oh, the newspaper she had from South Africa when they were forbidding children to learn, but they put it in the newspaper. Revolutionary journalism is what we're talking about. Thank you, Mr. Rodney, so much for facilitating that.
Yeah, that was really cool. That was really, really cool. Really, really cool. But we got a couple minutes left, and we didn't have our third anchor on the show, but Brother Barry, but I'm sure he's out there in the great white, tearing up, kicking us from dust and whatnot. It was a pleasure finally meeting that cat in person. This is the first time that we were all together in person like that. So it was really cool. We're back though. We're back live, and there's plenty of work to be done on this end of things. But as Rashi said so eloquently a couple of minutes ago, we're not done. It's not over. Rodney, you have any closing thoughts?
Well, as you were talking about us coming together, you know, Sister Angela was the one who gave me the idea to start Our Own Voices live, the radio show, which led me to meeting Brother Barry, and who from that has grown and expanded into speaking in Minnesota. So, you know, each one teach one, right? Each one reach one, each one teach one. That's a part of that. So thank you all for coming out to my town. Now I need to come out to your town. So look out, KC. Here comes Rodney.
Hey, these are some lonely old women, honey. You're going to be the regretted saying that, Mr. Rodney. These are some old, lonely women.
Lord have mercy. Look, whatever. Y'all be good. Y'all be safe. Family, until next week. We love you in advance, and you can do about it.